All right, folks, welcome back to the Game Trail Podcast. I told you guys I was going to get an episode out a week, and so far I'm doing it, so which is good. If you guys like the podcast, I'd love it if you'd leave a review. That helps out with the algorithm. We'll probably talk some algorithms today and some math. I got a guest on today from Precision Cut Archery, Tristan Litke. So I'm going to jump on with him here in a sec. Before I get going, I need to hit you guys with the promo code. You can use the promo code GAMETRAIL, that's GAMETRAIL, if you want to sign up for a Go Hunt Insider account. If you do that, use the promo code, you're going to get $50 back in the Go Hunt gear shop. Those are points that you can use towards the purchase of any gear that you want in the shop. Also, if you're already a member and you just want to save some cash on purchases in the shop, that same promo code is going to get you 10% off on most products in the shop. Also, shout out to Matthews. Matthews Archery is a sponsor of my podcast. Those guys have been really good to me. I was out shooting this morning, shooting my Lift X. Love that bow. I think I've had some friends that I've shot with a little bit recently, and we've all kind of agreed that if we could just figure out a way to just shoot a bow for a living, like day in and day out, if I could shoot 6-8 hours a day, that'd be awesome. But I'm not that good of a shot. And I can't make a living out of it, but I absolutely love shooting that bow. So shout out to Matthews as a sponsor of the podcast. So today I wanted to have Tristan on. So Tristan is at Precision Cut Archery. I've been getting a bunch of questions recently about sight tapes and how to build a sight tape. This isn't necessarily a conversation that existed probably, how long would you say? Maybe 10 years ago? People weren't really talking about sight tapes.
Yeah, I think like Archer's Advantage started like early 2000s. Like it was actually on like a Palm Pilot originally, I believe. So yeah, I mean, I would say, yeah, early 2000s, mid 2000s, somewhere in there.
Yeah, we always had Target Archers that were, you know, pretty heavy into using Archer's Advantage that were trying to get marks and things and using Palm Pilots. I remember that. but as far as bow hunters building sight tapes, I would say it's probably really kicked off with kind of the invention of slider sights. You started seeing single pin slider sights, you know, guys are using those in the bow hunting world, but yeah, it's kind of relatively new.
Too.
Yeah. Tack. Yep. It's really
like,
interesting.
I mean, bow hunters, like, you know, 60 yards and in or whatever, like it doesn't super matter, but yeah, you start flinging 100-yard bombs or things like that. Yeah. It starts to matter for sure.
For sure. Yeah. That kind of that invention of the slider sight and that incorporation of it into bow hunters in the bow hunting world. I mean, target archery, it always kind of bleeds downhill. It rolls into bow hunting. And I think once we started using slider sights, I saw more and more people kind of switching, especially in the whitetail woods, maybe switching to like a single pin sight and, you know, dialing in and actually holding for precise yardage. So we started seeing those come in. But I was curious as to what's your background as far as like your involvement in archery? How did you get into this?
Yeah, well, I'm just a dude. I grew up here in Minnesota, just whitetail hunting, kind of casual, like rifle season type stuff. We have like a 1 week long rifle season here. That's actually lies like dead center in the rut. So it's not really a big bow hunting state. I wouldn't say like compared to like states like Wisconsin next door or other states where the archery season is the season in the rut. There's just way more bow hunters. Like here, you don't really need to bow hunt. If you want to kill a big buck, they all get shot during rifle season anyway. yeah, so I kind of grew up doing that from a pretty young age, and then around the time I think I was like 16 or so, I saved up my pennies and I went to the archery shop and I bought my first bow. And at the time it was just a way to like hunt more, like again, like a week long rifle season wasn't really cutting it. I didn't play a fall sport, so I was just like, oh, I want to be in the woods anyway. So I started bow hunting, you know, bow hunting after school. My parents had 10 acres there that I could go out and bow hunt on. So grew up doing a ton of that. Kind of did that on and off throughout college and high school. And then once I graduated college and I had some money and some paid time off and things like that, I really got into the whole Western hunting thing. So this was, this would have been just a, just for context, this would have been like 2019 time frame. I was like, you know what? This is something I want to do. I grew up spending a lot of time in the mountains. My parents were teachers, and so they had the summers off, and we had horses and a horse trailer. So we literally like would load up the horse trailer as a family and go spend like 2 months in the mountains, whether it's Wyoming, Montana, Idaho, kind of those states, all summer. So spent a ton of time in the mountains, you know, looking at mule deer, looking at elk, looking at moose, like all the cool stuff. And so kind of had that, like, that, like I always was like looking west, right? As like a, right. as a young adult. And so it was kind of just, I like to hunt. Might as well go try to hunt some of that stuff. So 2019 went and got like a brand new bow, you know, like $3,000 for everything set up, with my first real job. And, from there, it's just kind of been a snowball, just absolutely hunting as much as I can, kind of making it like revolving the life around that, you know, fall time frame of getting out west.
Gotcha.
And all that. So
what was your first bow you bought? Do you remember?
Well, my first bow when I was 16 was a Mission Riot, which okay. I don't know if that means anything to you, yep. but it was like it was kind of that middle tier entry level package from the shop. I think it was like $600 for everything out the door. Killed quite a few whitetails with that bow. Then I ended up with a Z7.
Yep.
I don't know if it was which one exactly it was, but it was a Z7. Shot that for a couple years. And then the first bow I ever bought new, and it worked out, I had a connection who had like a sponsorship thing and whatever. So I ended up getting a NoCam HTR. And I hunted with that thing for a long time.
I love Matthews, but what a first bow to get into that you bought brand new. Because to me, if you look back at their entire lineup, and I don't think they'd mind me saying this, hopefully they won't. Maybe I'll get a phone call. But that one was interesting. That was an interesting bow.
Say what you want about, you know, the speed and the looks and all that, but that thing shot, man. That thing,
really?
That thing, like, in terms of like just being able to throw anything in there and it shoots a bullet hole right away, like that bow is so forgiving. I felt like
that's awesome.
Anything like shooting bear shafts at 50 yards, like messing around as a kid. Like it was just ridiculous how easy that bow was to get to shoot. But actually my first out west hunt was a January Arizona OTC coos deer hunt was with that bow. And then that was like the start. And I was like, okay, I'm getting serious about this. I'm going to go buy a real bow.
Right.
And go from there. But nah, a buddy of a buddy still has that bow and shoots it, but it's a good bow back in the day.
You might get it back sometime, huh?
I should try to get it back.
Yeah. I've bought and sold bows. Like my first bow, I've talked about it. I went in halvesies with my parents for Christmas one year. It was like, I think probably 2001 maybe, but it was a Matthews Q2. And I sold it. I've owned a bunch of bows since, but I always wished I'd retained at least that first one, you know, like the first one that was like my first modern compound bow. Like I killed a 330 bull that year with it actually. And I still have the bulls out here on my ping pong table, but yeah, I wished I had held on to that bow, man. I would love to pick that bow up and play with it. So I'm bummed out that I didn't get it.
My old Mission Riot is I sold that thing on eBay long ago. So yeah. I think that one's gone forever. But
probably is. What's your degree in?
Yeah, so I went to school for electrical engineering.
Okay.
And I didn't really use that degree like at all. I ended up going into more, I guess like IT, you could say, out of school. We were doing like kind of IT systems, server systems, network systems for like manufacturing facilities was what I started in. And then over the course of my career now over, I graduated college in 2018. So over kind of like the last, six years, I've kind of progressed more and more towards like software engineering. Right now I have a full-time kind of software engineering job for a large enterprise. And then write a bunch of software on the side, obviously.
So right.
That's kind of the thing that I've found, I guess, that I enjoy to do, which was interesting because I didn't think, like, I had originally went to, like, when I signed up for college, like, my degree was computer science. And I was like, oh, man, I can't sit at a desk all day. Like, that seems terrible. And then here I've kind of found my way back to what I was originally going to go to school for.
It's still kind of terrible.
I mean, I sit
at a desk most days too. So,
it's like every job. Like, I mean, pretty much any job is going to involve a lot of desk sitting, unless it's like, you know, construction or something like that. And I did that for a summer too, and that wasn't for me either.
So you didn't. Yeah, I mean, it's making sense to me as I'm talking to you. But did you have any background in like target archery? Did you get into target archery ever? Or
I didn't. Hunting? Just hunting. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and really just, I guess the way like precision cut archery came to be is I like I've kind of always went off the deep end with whatever. I'm like an extremely obsessive type person. You know, that's with like from the hunting side, like hunting, you know, for a dude with a normal job who would ever, I mean, hunting 50, 60, 70 days out west a year, plus whatever whitetail stuff I can squeeze in. Like the way my job was, I could structure my time where I could work a whole bunch during the winter and summer in the manufacturing space. A lot of the big like stuff happens over holidays and over weekends, just because that's when the plants can have downtime. That's when we can work on their systems. So I could do that through the whole year, like work Thanksgiving, work Christmas, work all the, you know, work all like the holidays, much to, you know, I don't think my family loved that very much, but
sure.
I did a lot of that stuff and then stockpiled all this time to go use out west. So, you know, right. Very kind of obsessive there, doing the whole like, you know, got into like ultra running because of, you know, because of out west hunting. I've kind of dropped off that train now, just with life stuff. But, yeah. So like from a like very young age, like really from my first bow, I ended up like buying a bow press right away. I was like, I want to be able to work on this thing myself. My pro shop here wasn't great. And I was just like, as long as I'm going to do it, I might as well like learn all there is to, you know right. about it. So got like one of those old yellow,
oh, yeah.
I don't know if you like the apple archery, I think it was.
I had one.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. So did that and then ended up, again, once I had money, got like the last chance, and I still have that press now. And just I've kind of always worked on my own equipment, got in the Archer's Advantage thing early on, as soon as I got a slider sight.
Was that kind of the kickoff for you? Like, what was the light bulb for you where you were like, oh, I think there's bread on the table here. Like, there's something that I could do different.
Yeah. So, I mean, just obviously using some of those old programs, and like all of them, right? They're just like, you know, they feel like they're from the early 2000s.
For sure.
And, as a software guy, especially as I got more into software development, I was like, man, this seems like it could be done a lot better than what it is. And so it was part of that. And then part, my buddy who owns Bobar's Archery, who I believe you have one of his shields for the Garmin. He started that company and he, at the time he was living next to me, we shot league together over the winter and things. And like hunted a whole bunch and stuff. And he had kind of started this little side archery business. I was like, that seems kind of like a neat little idea. Like he's, you know, making some money and making little things. It's kind of fun. So it's like, what could I do? And then it like clicked. It's like, I could make a better archery software.
Right.
So that was kind of it's kind of just wanting to do something in the like, kind of the archery space, the outdoor industry kind of thing.
Yeah.
And then just like the pain that I was like, man, it seems like there could be a better version of this. It seems like this could be done really well. And it seems like people would pay some amount of, you know, money for that service. So
for sure.
Just kind of started it would have been like early 2023, started messing around, like relearning all of the math I had forgot from college and like all the stuff. At that point, I really hadn't done all that much like true software development. So like a lot of that stuff was all new learning too. It's like learning the math, learning the software stuff, putting the pieces together. Had a proof of concept launched in like June or so of that year of 2023. It just kind of, you know, putzed along that year, like had some adoption, but it wasn't like, you know,
right.
crazy.
Yeah.
And then 2024 was a much, much better year for the business. Just word getting out. Kind of learning how to do marketing and some of that stuff, getting, you know, the right connections made with folks in the industry and all that. And
sure.
And this year has been good as well.
Yeah. I think for a lot of people, I would say, man, I would bet 95% plus of the sites that we sell out of the gear shop that go out our door are slider sites.
Yeah.
You know, it might be a 3-pin or a 5-pin or a single pin or double pin or whatever configuration it is that people offer anymore. But I would say 95% plus probably are slider sights. You know, everybody wants a slider sight. They want to be able to like dial to the yardage or, you know, extend their range if they're using their bottom pin and reach out to like 70, 80, 90, 100 plus. But I think most people, when they buy a slider sight, they get a packet of these. So I've got a packet of these. These are from UltraView for sight, but maybe run people through what it is that Precision Cut Archery does and why you think it's beneficial. And then maybe we'll get into what do you incorporate into your software, your program, And how does it differ from just like using a sight tape like these that you get from like a factory sight? Is there a difference?
Yeah. So maybe let's start real high level. So at a super high level, a sight tape is a ballistic solution. So it's very similar to like a rifle ballistics, you know, thing where like, you know, you're shooting 600 yards, you dial however many MOA or mils, you know, down in your scope, and then you can shoot, you know, right on. And so it's a very similar concept to that, where we're like adjusting the shot angle essentially so that that arrow hits the thing that we're aiming at. And so if you keep that in mind, and kind of, I'll kind of keep relating it back to the rifle world, because I think that maybe makes a little more sense in people's head. And there's a lot of people probably that are also kind of long distance rifle shooters as well. But when we look at like, you know, rifle ballistics, like ballistic coefficient is a thing that like everyone like intuitively understands that they need to have in order to calculate drop over, say, a long shot, as well as muzzle velocity, the distance that the scope is above the bore, all of those sorts of things that go into calculating a rifle ballistic solution. A sight tape is no different. Maybe the degree of precision is less just because we're, you know, we're humans and we're trying to hold the bow offhand, and that sort of stuff. But I think that's an important thing to say up front. Now, in terms of factory tapes, they can be potentially very accurate depending on the ballistics of your unique archery setup. So for a bow, like we have an arrow, and like for rifle bullets, we have a ballistic coefficient for a bullet. Like that's defined for the actual, you know, individual bullet. Like the manufacturers will publish that. There's third party companies like Applied Ballistics that do testing on individual bullets. And we have that. For an arrow, like everyone's projectiles, like entirely unique, because like we build them ourselves, they're factory fletched. There's different veins, there's different helicals, there's different lengths, there's different dynamic spine reactions. Like every arrow that comes out of everyone's bow is different. Even potentially if it's the same exact arrow build, it might react differently out of your bow than it does out of my bow. And all of that affects that quote unquote ballistic coefficient of the arrow. So what we can do with software is we can get, you know, very close to that exact ballistic coefficient. Now a factory tape is kind of guessing at that, and it might be a good match for your arrow and it might not be. And kind of a telltale sign, or like what you'll see if it's not right. Like if you throw a factory tape on, this is what you might look for to kind of know like, oh, is this actually right? So we've all done like the, you know, you shoot in two distances. Let's say you shoot in basically all the sight manufacturers recommend you shoot in like a 20 and a 60.
Yep.
Let's say. Now I wouldn't recommend shooting in a 20 and a 60, especially a 20. Because in my opinion, it's much too close to get a very precise mark. Like you could be, you know, a yard off plus at 20, and it's still going to be like, you know, borderline same arrow hole.
Sure. Especially with inconsistencies with your form, or, you know, the arrow breaking. I mean, it's really hard to say like indefinitely, like that arrow, you know, is dead nuts at 20. Do you know what I mean? Like, There's it can be a quarter inch high, quarter inch low. And I think for most people that's like within their variable, but I mean, most, you know, pro archers maybe, but for the, you know, common man, myself included, it would be pretty tough. I agree.
Yeah. And even for the pros, like you're much better off, in my opinion, shooting in, like, let's say we shoot in a 40 and we shoot in an 80, right? Mm-hmm. So we shoot that in on a blank tape. It's hitting perfect. Like at 40, we're in like, you know, let's say an inch or a half inch, like really, really tight. And again, like maybe that's not our group, but we're like picking the shots that break good, that feel like they should have hit behind the pin. And then 80, maybe we're in like a piece of like duct tape. So our marks are very good, let's say. And so we take that gap and we line those up on all the factory tapes that we have, right? Like this is kind of the process to choose a factory tape. And let's say we find a match that's perfect. It matches our 40 and 80 exactly. So we know when we put that tape on, 40 and 80 are going to be money. But what you'll see often is 40 and 80 are money, but maybe 60 is 3/4 of a yard high. Like maybe we're hitting, you know, at 60 yards, that might be, I don't know, 2-3 inches high at 60. And then we get out to 100 or 120 and maybe we're, you know, 3, 4, 5 inches low. Mm-hmm. Like that's the telltale sign specifically. 40 and 80 are money because those are the ones we shot in and selected our tape from. But the ranges in between and the ranges beyond start to deviate from what they're like assuming when they make those factory tapes. Yeah. And there's really nothing we can do about that. Like we could, like, let's say, you know, 40 and 100, now we get that money. Now 60, 70, 80 aren't quite right kind of thing. So you can kind of play with that a little bit to try to get like split the difference essentially, but it's not going to be perfect. Probably it might be, it might just like, you might just get lucky. For me personally, like my last year's hunting bow, when I made my tape with like my software and did all that, it was very, very close to a Spot Hog factory tape out to 100. Granted, their tapes only go to 100, but like I would have been probably happy with that. We were within probably a quarter yard at every yardage, which for me, most of the time, like rangefinders aren't that accurate. So, so I guess that's what you'll kind of see. And really what a custom sight tape, what a like ballistically true sight tape gets you is it'll get you a tape that's dead on at every single range. It's not only right at 40 and 80, the marks you shot in, it's right at 20, 40, 80, 60, 100, 120. Like every range will be dead nuts out of the gate. Yeah. And for like hunters, that may or may not be super important. For target archery, it absolutely is. Like there's very few target archers that end up shooting factory tapes. Almost everyone shoots either a custom sight tape or they shoot off their sights built in scale with the with the click system.
Yeah, I was laughing because I mean I've been playing around with a sight, so I've got a UV sight, and I was playing around recently with factory sight tapes, and I mean it's got a single pin post. It's a 3-pin, but it's a single pin post, right? So I just been using the top pin, and I went through the same process you just described, sighted in two different distances, found the tape that correlated close to it, and slapped it on there, and like you're dead nuts. So some of my yardages are perfect, the two that I sighted in, but there's some there's some inconsistencies, and they're not like crazy, but like I can tell you my 60 yard pin, you know, I've got to set it like on 61, you know, to get it to hit that dead nuts, you know, 80, whereas 80s is good because that's where I sighted in at. Right. So anywhere in between those, I'll see like these slight inconsistencies. So I was shooting this morning at 45 yards. Same thing. I'm a slightly hot. I'm like at the top of a, you know, a feeder dot, yay big. Right. So I'm like hitting the very top of that. And I'm grouping three or four arrows that are like, yay. And, yeah, I mean, you can definitely start to see like it's close-ish, you know, but it's not precise. It's not like hitting middle, right? So you described that well. Walk me through the process of like actually, you know, building a sight tape. Like what's incorporated in it? What do you need? I know that unique to your platform, you know, you need like your peep to center of arrow height. You need your peep to your pin distance. And those are incorporated into those. You know, there's other things in it like altitude, so elevation, air density, those kinds of things. Run me through the process of like how you build a sight tape with your software.
Yeah. So in the rifle world again, right, there's usually this idea of like a profile in the ballistics application. So that would include like the details about your rifle and your twist rate and your like bullets ballistic coefficient, your muzzle velocity, all of this sort of stuff. We have the same sort of thing in archery. Like we're like I need specific details about your setup in order to calculate what that tape needs to be. And I've kind of broken this down into kind of three different steps. And so the first step is the bow. And the bow consists of those two measurements you just mentioned. It's the peep to arrow and the peep to pin. And like that's it for the bow. That's at full draw, much easier in a draw board, but it's those two measurements. And that kind of tells us about like the geometry of the sight. And like, for example, like just an example, it's kind of that phenomenon where like you move your sight out and your marks get more spaced out. You move your sight in, your marks get closer together. That's why you can shoot further the closer your sight is to your bow.
Yep.
So that's kind of the one factor, is it's kind of like the scale factor for the width of like all the marks. And then the sight height is there's a parallax error at play because your eye is above the arrow. So this is why if you're shooting like a 5-yard target, you might need to be dialed for like 50. Or if you're shooting a, you know, 2-yard target, you might need to be dialed for 90. Like that's kind of that thing at play. So it kind of squishes those shorter marks closer together. And that measurement is also critical for things like cuts for angled shooting, because there's a parallax error there as well as for those middle marks. So again, that like gap between 40 and 80, knowing that, you know, peep to arrow measurements helps us lay out those middle marks perfectly as well. So gotcha. That's the bow. Two simple measurements. It takes, you know, a minute in a draw board. If you don't have a draw board, you can hold your bow a full draw and have your buddy measure. I don't really recommend that. I wouldn't say it's the safest thing to do, but it does work in a pinch if you need to. Which by the way, like a draw board, I think everyone should have a draw board, even if you don't work on your equipment. Like it's super cheap to build one, if nothing else, like a boat winch, a piece of steel pipe to like hold the bow grip. And like, that's pretty much it, you know, probably under $50 to build one yourself, obviously. Yeah. Be safe and all that sort of stuff. Like legal disclaimer about how, you know, whatever, but, yeah, I think everyone should have one. Checking timing, getting measurements, all of those sorts of things. Super easy to build. It's great. So that's kind of the first construct in the program is the bow. The second piece is the arrow. And what you're probably used to, if you've used like Archer's Advantage or really any other sight tape program that's existed, is usually they ask you a whole bunch of details about your arrow. Like they ask you for the vanes that you're shooting, the vane count, the arrow length, the arrow diameter, all of these sorts of things. And probably the first thing you'll notice if you use ours is that we don't ask about any of that. The only thing we ask for is total arrow weight. And the reason for that is in the past, like every program has tried to look at your arrow build. Like they've tried to look at the vanes that you're using and all that. And they've tried to like estimate that quote unquote ballistic coefficient of your arrow. And that's why like something like an Archer's Advantage, something like an Archer's Mark, like they're also not quite exactly right. And it's because they're trying to estimate that drag coefficient. And so same thing with like Archer's Mark, and you could talk to any professional or Archer's Advantage rather. You can talk to any professional, and if they shoot in that 40 and 80, let's say like we talked about, Archer's Advantage will almost always be a little bit high in those middle marks. Like that's super common. And then they'll go and adjust the peep height in there until that and until it gets kind of brought back in. Yep. So all that to say, we're not estimating the drag of the arrow based on its components. We're calculating that based on the third step of the process, which is what we're calling a sight in. And this is there's four different options today. And this is the part where we're like determining the ballistic coefficient of your arrow. So there's four options today. The first option is a launch speed and two shot in sight marks. So this was the like original option, the first option that ever existed when I was doing the original proof of concepts. It's kind of the standard. I would say it's still probably the most commonly used in like across all professional archers. Most people still use this method. So launch speed with a chronograph, and then you shoot in your two marks, let's say a 40 and an 80, and you put that measurement with like a calipers into the program. That's option one. Option two is three sight marks. So for three sight marks, we don't need a launch speed anymore because we have three data points. And it's the same thing. So maybe you shoot in a 40, an 80, and a 120 or something like that, and you measure those three gaps, or two gaps, I guess, for three marks. That's option two. Option three is what we call the quick start method. That is just a launch speed. So this method, we actually are estimating the drag of your arrow. This is good for like I personally use this method for like indoor 3D league, where we're only shooting out to like 40 yards. It's completely solid out to 40-ish. Well, it's completely solid out to much farther than that, but it's for sure completely solid out to, you know, 40, 50, 60. I really like this method for like kids, people who like can't shoot in long range or super precise marks, new archers, if you're shooting indoors. It can be like very good out to however far. It just depends on your unique arrow build and how well it lines up with our guess, basically. Right. There are people that use that method out to 100, 120 without, you know, any question. I would say it's within a yard. It's within a yard out to 100 for pretty much everyone. And it takes, right. you know, no time because it's just a launch speed. So you shoot it through the chrono, you put it in, and it's 5 minutes and you have a very good sight tape. And then the fourth method is the downrange speed method. This is the newest method. I would say it's the coolest method. It also requires special equipment, like a yeah. expensive chronograph.
yeah.
So like, I think a lot of people think that this is the only method we have just because a lot of the like YouTube content and things, like it's by far the most talked about.
Sure.
Because it's probably the coolest. Mm-hmm. But essentially, instead of relying on like shot in data, like shot in marks, we're looking at the actual measured speeds of an arrow downrange. So let's say you have a velocity reading at 20 yards, you have a velocity reading at 60 yards, you plug that in, and we're able to get that, again, quote unquote, ballistic coefficient of the arrow from that. That's pretty much the only method I use nowadays, just because it takes, like, again, like 5 minutes. If you have like a lab radar or like a Garmin chronograph, it needs to be like a very accurate chronograph for it to work well.
Right.
We do have people shooting through normal optical chronographs too. Optical chronographs, like the ones with like the light screens, you know, like mm-hmm. that you'd normally see back in the day.
Yep.
They can be good. They tend to be inconsistent. They tend to be inconsistent in different lighting conditions. So if you have a good one by chance, you know, you can throw it down there at 60 yards and try to thread the needle through through the light screen. But I don't super recommend that. It's much, much easier with like a lab radar or a Garmin.
Yeah, that's where Bobar's product comes in handy, right? That you can, it's a little steel plate that you essentially mount like a Garmin chrono on. You put it on the backside of it, so it protects that chrono so that you don't put an arrow through your Garmin chrono, which I've seen, which is a real bummer.
Yeah,
I haven't seen it personally. Yeah. I've seen photos, I should say. But
I was kind of surprised. So I kind of always thought that like, oh, man, Garmin's not going to be too happy that we're like recommending that people put their Garmin downrange and shoot past it. And they probably don't approve of the shield either. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure even if it would like really the arrow hit that, like it's probably going to tip over the tripod. Like it's just probably not a good idea. It's like a last resort line of defense, but it sure is better than an arrow through it. That's for sure.
For sure.
But I did see that Garmin has in their settings, they have a downrange mode, that basically it just changes like what, like the unit like flashes or something when it reads. So you can like see if it's reading from a ways away is like the way they put it. So I guess they're not like completely, saying that shooting downrange is a bad idea.
Right.
But,
they wouldn't have put it in it. Right.
Exactly.
Yeah. So you input this, and again, I mean, go back to elevation or altitude, because I know that you can play with that. Right. So you can play with those numbers as well when you build out your tapes. And I thought this was interesting because I don't know, for a number of years, I live at like 5,700 foot in elevation, and I would, you know, work out my sight tape, and then I might run up to attack event in Salt Lake, and we're going to shoot at like 11,000 foot. Right. And I'd end up running hot, especially like I get out to further yardages. It feels like those 100 yarders, 80 yarders, I'd be like, you know, running up in impact point. And I always thought like, oh, it's just got to be like, you know, less air density, right? Air's not as thick. It's kind of cruising through. So my arrow's probably, you know, cutting through that a little bit quicker, and I'm hitting high. But it was interesting. I spent probably, I don't know, hour and a half the other day just playing with your software, but it makes a real difference, right?
Yeah. That's something that's gotten a lot of press recently, I think, since we came out with this feature, but also just the TAC events, because people are traveling to, you know, much different locations than their home is at, and they're shooting really long shots. Like normally if you show up to hunting camp and you shoot a couple shots at 40 yards, like you're not going to see any difference. But yeah, you fling an 80 or 100 yard bomb, you're definitely going to start seeing that difference. And I think it's important to keep in mind, not necessarily that you're going to shoot animals at that far, whatever, you know, do whatever you want. But I always come back to like the follow-up shot scenario. Let's say you make a less than ideal shot. My buddy had this happen. He was antelope hunting. He had a 25 yard shot out of a ground blind. He shot the antelope. Wasn't a great shot. It was 25 yards. Like nobody's going to say, like, oh, you shouldn't have shot that. That was too far or whatever. But it was like, you know, whatever. A little bit far back. Wasn't, you know, he would have died, but like it wasn't great. He ran out there, stood at 100 yards, dialed to 100 yards on a sight tape, put a perfect heart shot on him at 100 yards. Like, done deal. No stress, right. No whatever. Like, I think that's such an important thing for anyone with a sliding sight to keep in mind is, like, what a great little piece of insurance to, like, save potentially a couple really bad days or a couple really bad weeks or a year if you have to wait all the way till next season to, like,
a lifetime, you know,
think about that. About yeah, exactly. Exactly. So all that to say, yes, elevation, like air density, like will change how your bow hits, especially at long range, especially mm-hmm. if you're like me coming from Minnesota. Like even if I go to like Eastern Montana or South Dakota, like to, you know, maybe 5,000 feet of elevation coming from here, like there's a difference there, especially at, you know, 100 yards or something like that.
Yeah.
And it, like something like a high country mule deer hunt in Colorado at 14,000 feet. Like, yeah, it's going to be, you're going to potentially be a lot high.
Right.
Especially if you're coming from like the Midwest or the East Coast or somewhere really low.
Yeah.
So yeah, we do have the ability to adjust for that. Just like any good rifle ballistic solution does, right? Like it's taking in your environmentals with like a Kestrel or whatnot, and calculating a firing solution based on that. So we can print preprint tapes that are like for the new quote unquote air density that you're traveling to. Mm-hmm. We can also calculate little like charts that'll tell you like, okay, 100-yard shot, you have to shoot it for 99 now because you're going to be hot otherwise. So yeah, that's been a pretty big, I guess, feature for us and something that I think is really important for people to consider, especially for tax and things like that.
Yeah. I think for hunting too. I mean, everybody should be, or I think most people are like striving for the best possible outcome, right? Because hunting permits aren't cheap. The amount of travel and time off involved in going on a hunt is extensive. And man, I think at least I am, I'm always like trying to strive for the best possible outcome. And, you know, I don't know how much it like actually matters when you get out past like 40, 50, 60 yards. And I don't know that I would, you know, I'm not taking shots. I mean, you bring up the scenario of a follow-up shot and that's a great point, but like even just the confidence in the back of your head that like, I have a tape that's built for this environment, this elevation, this air density, like to me anyway, it just like gives me the warm and fuzzies, right? It's like, okay, yeah. I'm just more confident. Like I feel better in my whole entire setup, which I think, I mean, the more I've bow hunted, the more I've shot archery, I think so much of, you know, all that just, it plays between your ears. It's just confidence. Like how confident am I that I'm going to make this shot? And it's like, it's tied up in all kinds of things, you know, arrow selection, your bow tune, how many arrows you shot, your sight tape, all those kinds of things. So I think just even in that regard, I think it's just such a cool little bump, you know, and confidence that you get. It's like, I have a tape that's built for this exact environment and elevation, which is cool.
Yeah. And just to be like that arrow is going to hit behind that pin. Like one of my favorite, like kind of right before I go on a hunt, little drills is like start at 20 and shoot one arrow, 20, 30, 40, 50, you know, all the way out as far as you want. And to just know that every single one of those distances, like it's hitting exactly behind the pin. Like, man, does that feel good compared to like, I'm 2 inches high at 60 and I'm 3 inches low at 80 or whatever. Like, yeah, it's just so nice to just boom, 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 hit perfect.
Yeah.
Just to put a little bit of hard numbers on the whole elevation thing, just for reference. So this was an Instagram post I made a couple days ago. This is like, for me, I'm at 1,000 feet here. Let's say you're traveling to 10,000 feet. These are just kind of estimate numbers based on my setup. At 80 yards, 4 inches high. 100 yards, 7 inches high. 120 yards, 12 and a half inches high. So, I mean, that's a big difference. I mean, even at 80, 4 inches high, I mean, that's probably out of the kill zone on most animals.
Like, for sure.
Definitely something you gotta think about.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's crazy. So after you build your sight tape, right, you've got all the parameters put input into the program. Essentially, it's pretty cool because I was playing with it the other day, but you can build out your sight tape. Like you can make the thickness of the lines what you want. Like you can pretty much make that thing exactly how you want it, which is cool. And then, you know, you print those off, you can cut those and put them on your sight and you're off to the races. So I think it's really cool. I want to ask you about, so I've been playing with it. I just wrote an article for, for our website on, you know, momentum care, you know, kinetic energy. You know, there has been, it's interesting because things in archery like flip flop, like, you know, they get trendy, right? So heavy arrows, yeah, a lot of penetration, really popular. And then now it kind of feels like it's swinging the other way. You have Easton, they launched the 5.0s. You've got, you know, Victory that launches the HLRs. So you've got these super light arrows. I was playing with some arrow builds the other day, just looking at them. And, you know, I could build out an HLR that would probably tune out and spine for my bow. You know, that's like 410, 15 grains, you know.
Yeah. How heavy is your arrow typically?
I would say probably for the last at least 7-8 years, it's been anywhere from 450 to maybe 505.
What's your draw length? You're a pretty long draw, aren't you?
30.
Okay.
Yeah. Yep. So the arrows I'm shooting right now, most regularly, and I'm a tinker, but, I've been shooting those, for the last 2 weeks, I've been shooting those UltraView 1Ks in a 300 spine, and they're total finished out there, like right at 470 grains.
Sure.
So, which is kind of a good mix for me. You know, 70 pound bow, 30 inch draw. So I figure I'm probably pushing that maybe 287, 88 feet per second, maybe somewhere in the neighborhood. I need to shoot it through a chrono. I've got homework to do myself. So, but I think it's cool that you guys do, so once you develop your arrow and your build, your bow and everything in your guys' site, you guys kick out, kinetic energy calculators, right? At a variety of distances. And yep. I think when people talk about kinetic energy, there's like the, you know, the little charts. I put it in this article I just wrote. It's like, this is the recommended range of kinetic energy for this animal, you know, whether it's an antelope or an elk or, you know, moose or dangerous game or whatever it might be. But I think when you talk kinetic energy, most people are just thinking like, oh, that's the kinetic, and it is, right? Your kinetic energy calculation for most programs is like right out of the bow.
Yeah.
So I think it's cool when your guys' software, you actually get to see the curve, you know, of the arrow, the arc of the arrow, and then you get to see kinetic energy at a variety of distances.
Yeah.
And I think that's really important. It may be less important for a guy like me that's shooting a 470 grain arrow at, you know, 290 foot per second. But for somebody that's shooting 50 pounds, I think it becomes really important, right? Because you want to see how much energy you're actually pushing, and it can like help you decide on your effective distance of like, okay, I probably should not take a shot over this range because I don't know that I have the actual energy to get the penetration that I want.
Yeah. So I guess one thing to say about kinetic energy in general is that that's like almost entirely dictated by like your draw length and draw weight. Like right. Kinetic energy is basically fixed for like trail. Like trail's kinetic energy is, you know, it's 90, yep. no matter what weight arrow he shoots. Mm-hmm. Like there's probably a little bit of like efficiency gains by going to a heavier arrow, but I would say very like with modern compound bows, very minimal. Like yep. a modern Matthews like is going to be very similar kinetic energy wise, regardless of the arrow weight that you're shooting. So yeah, you're kind of limited there. Now, heavy arrows will retain energy better at distance. We actually have a feature in the app. It's under like the build section where you can compare different arrow weights out of your bow. And you can put a, you know, 400 grain arrow and a 500 grain arrow side by side and see what they're doing as they fly. So like, here's just an example. This is a 70 pound bow at 30 inch draw. 400 grain arrow and a 500 grain arrow. They're both like 83 ish out of the bow. The 500 grain I have at 84, the 400 is 83.3. So virtually identical.
Yep.
By the time you get to 80 yards, the 400 grain arrow has lost like 2.5 more foot pounds of kinetic energy by the time it gets to 80. So that is a factor for sure. So that could be a reason to, you know, maybe shoot a little heavier arrow.
Yeah. Now,
there's like other arguments there when it comes to arrow weight, right? It's like the thing that I personally, and like, I don't want to go down the rabbit hole too much. For what it's worth, full disclosure, I shoot a very medium weight arrow pretty much always. I've been between 420 and 460 for the last 5 years. So, you know, take that for what it's worth. For me, it always comes back to you have to hit the lungs.
Yep.
Like everything should be optimized for hitting the lungs in the situations that you're in. So in terms of hitting the lungs, like there's a couple different sources of error, like outside of like the shooter, like let's say you break a good shot. There's other reasons why you might not hit the lungs. The first is you don't have a good range. Yep. I would say that is the most common. I've done it. You've done it. I'm sure everyone in the whole wide world that shot at any amount of animals has misranged the animal, whether they ranged the piece of grass in front of it, whether the animal took a couple steps and they didn't realize it, or maybe they did realize it and they guessed wrong.
Yep.
Like everyone's misranged, and a faster arrow has more range forgiveness, period. Like it, you will be closer the faster you're shooting to hitting where you thought you were trying to hit. So I think that's an important thing to keep in mind. Like that's such a big deal, especially for Western hunting. Now for whitetail hunting, 25 yards, 30 yards, probably doesn't matter. For Western hunting, I think that's extremely important. But there's a big but here, because heavier arrows do better in the wind. And I would say that's the other like uncontrollable kind of variable that Western hunters like us have to contend with is wind. And wind can be, especially, you know, longer distances, wind drift can be ridiculous. And like that's where a heavier arrow is better. So I mean there's pros and cons, and I think you have to weigh, like, are you more worried about range stuff or are you more worried about wind? And like that's the thought process I go through. And at the end of the day, I choose something middle of the road and don't worry too much about it.
As do I. Yeah.
Yeah.
Arrow builds and trajectory, and you dive down that rabbit hole. Just for example, so Brady assigns me an article. What grain arrow should I shoot for elk hunting? And I'm like, okay, yeah, that's an article. I can write that article. So I start thinking about it, and I sit down and I'm like, oh, that'll probably be, you know, a few pages. I can whip that out. But then, you know, just like you and I have talked here, like you start diving down rabbit holes and you're like, okay, there is way more to this to like actually, you know, selecting your arrow, all the things that you just mentioned, you know, wind drift, penetration, you know, misjudging a yardage and, you know, what that ultimately is going to mean to maybe either hitting the animal in a vital or missing it or wounding it. Right. So it's like, man, there's a lot that goes into that. You brought up wind. So something I think is cool about your software is that like you actually have this, you know, like a windage hold, right?
Yeah.
Which is super cool. I don't know. Maybe other programs have utilized that. I've just not noticed it, but, run me through that and what it can do for somebody.
Yeah. So the first thing I'll say about wind drift, and this is something that you'll see on pretty much every YouTube video or podcast that's ever talked about wind in the whole history of the world, is everyone talks about the side profile of the arrow, right? So it makes sense, right? Like the arrow gets launched, the wind's hitting the side profile of the arrow, and that's what matters. So in order to minimize wind drift, we want to minimize the side profile of the arrow. Not true. The best article I've seen on this is by Randy Ulmer. I don't remember what website it's on. If you Google Randy Ulmer wind drift or something, you'll probably find it. And what Randy explains in that article is that when you shoot an arrow and there's a crosswind, the arrow aligns itself with the airstream that the arrow sees. So the airstream that the arrow sees is the sum of the forward air from the arrow being launched plus the crosswind. So the arrow will like vector, like weather vane into the crosswind. That's why if you're shooting in like really gusty winds, you'll see your arrow like fishtail all over, because it's constantly trying to like realign itself to that airstream. It's also why, like, if you look at like a helicopter or a plane flying in the wind, it's actually like angled into the wind as it flies.
Yep.
So it looks like it's flying crooked, but from the arrow's perspective, the air is coming right down the like shaft of the arrow. Like the airstream is still in alignment with the arrow. So wind drift, the vast majority of wind drift comes from the fact that now some of that aerodynamic drag is coming from the side. So that's why the arrow starts to go, you know, to the left or right in a crosswind. So all that to say, it's not the side profile, it's aerodynamic drag. If we can determine aerodynamic drag, we can determine wind drift, which we can determine, and we have determined aerodynamic drag in order to make your sight tape. So we have that, so now we can just spit out a wind drift table. So we're basically running simulations of different crosswinds and putting that in a table with the amount of like drift or amount of hold that you have.
Yeah. So you break it out by miles per hour. Is that right?
Yeah, it can be miles per hour, meters per second, whatever you want it to be. Mm-hmm. All that's like customizable. And then I guess I'll also say we have on the website, we have just like a wind drift table, and I actually have, I guess my range finder's in the shed, but I put a cut chart and a wind drift chart on my range finder while like for hunting. So I can quick look like, just a quick estimate, like, okay, 60 yards. I'm in the prairies of South Dakota and it's ripping 35 miles an hour, mm-hmm. which I'm probably not taking a 60 yard shot in that because that's ridiculous.
Yeah.
But, I mean, some of those days it's like, it could be 20 yards away and there's no way I'm getting this shot off today.
Yeah.
But in any case, yeah, I always keep that on my rangefinder. And now we have our mobile app, which includes I don't know if you've looked at that at all yet.
I haven't, but that was going to be my next question is run me through the mobile app and how you see, because I think we talked earlier, but I'm used to, seeing target archers use like a Palm Pilot or their phone, right, to get their marks for the various yardage. And that's under like a very controlled environment. But how do you see a mobile app helping a bow hunter, specifically like a Western big game bow hunter?
Yeah. So I would say usually if I'm, sitting above a bedded mule deer or something, just about the last thing I'm thinking about is pulling up my phone to mm-hmm. like plug in a ballistic solution for my bow. So I don't know like if it's like in the field wise, if it's super applicable to the vast majority of bow hunters, but for something like attack or something like, target archers, things like that, I think it's super cool. Or just, getting a feel for like, you kind of have to internalize some of the, wind drift stuff, like to get a feel for mm-hmm. what amount of wind correlates to so like just using that at least in practice and, matching it up with reality. Or maybe you have a super technical long range shot and you're a like Kyle Douglas or a Bodie Turner or someone who can make that shot. And maybe you have like, plenty of time to like get a true, good, solid firing solution before you take the shot. I don't know. Mm-hmm. That's the thing, but
I actually can see use case scenario, to be honest. Cause I mean, there's a lot of times, where I've, I killed a buck a few years ago and I got in and above him. And I think this isn't completely uncommon, but you get above a buck and he's bedded and maybe it's 11:30 noon. You might have like a 2.5-3 hour wait for him to stand up. Right.
Yeah.
And there's like that initial, like, adrenaline rush where you're like, oh man, I got to get everything together. I got to be the right frame of mind. You're like going through it. But as you're waiting for that deer to stand up, you kind of have a chance to like get your wits about you. And I actually can see, or you're hunting antelope out of a blind. I think actually like there probably is like a real world use case scenario where I could see myself, pulling out my phone and checking it and take a look at it and being like, okay, wind's blowing, 10 miles an hour, it's 25 yards. Or 50 yards or whatever, this is going to be my potential drift. And I think it's that other little piece of the puzzle where previously you're guessing, like you're hoping.
Yeah.
Right. But exactly. I think just having it. Go ahead.
I was going to say, you also have, outside of wind too, for a situation like that you just described, like a bedded mule deer, mm-hmm. it's 50 yards, it's probably a steep slope. Maybe it's a, 45 degree slope. Or something like the cut on a shot like that is also a huge factor that I think people need to be consider. And your rangefinder isn't right. Like there's an extra layer. Like we need to apply the ballistics on top of what the rangefinder is telling you. So if your rangefinder is telling you 52, you might need to shoot that shot for 50 because it's a downhill, steep downhill shot. The rangefinder is not taking into account that ballistics of your setup. So for like downhill, you're going to have to subtract what a rangefinder tells you. On an uphill, you're going to have to add what a rangefinder tells you. So that's just another kind of thing that to think about. Like those cuts are a huge deal as well.
So that buck that I shot, I ranged with my rangefinder. I think he was 39 yards and I ended up shooting him for like 28. So it was like straight downhill. I was like leaning out over a ledge to shoot him. Run me through. So a lot of these rangefinders will have like a calculation built into it, right? So you have a full draw five from Leupold, or you've got the, you know, the SIGs. They've got bow mode, so you can put in your foot per second of your arrow and your setup that you shoot, and then it'll give you like a corrected, you know, cut, right? Whether you're shooting uphill or down. How accurate do you think those are? Do you still use a cut chart that you develop with your guys' software and you keep that with you, you said?
Yeah, so I would say there is three different flavors of rangefinders. The first flavor is, which there isn't too much of these anymore, but would be a rangefinder that just gives you the line of sight distance. So this is like, it's just purely the distance. It's always just like straight up line of sight distance to whatever you're at. So in the past, that was the only option, like way back in the day. And you would always have to use a cut chart to subtract like so really what you're trying to do is shoot for that like horizontal distance to the target. Or like that's the quote unquote rifleman's rule for angled shooting, is you shoot it for the horizontal distance because that's the distance that gravity's acting on the arrow. So that's kind of where cut charts started, I guess you would say, is from that era. Then we got angle compensating rangefinders, and for the longest time, these were simply giving you that horizontal distance to the target, or you'll hear some people call it the cosine distance, to the target. And that is like, you picture like, you know, angled shot, you have a vertical distance and a horizontal distance. The rangefinder is giving you that horizontal distance. And this is a good approximation. Like for, I would say, normal hunting situations, like moderate angles, moderate distances, that's going to be very close. When you start to get to extreme angles and extreme distances, or even just extreme angles, you're going to start to see that horizontal distance approximation break down and not be right. So the kind of rule of thumb is for downhill shots, you have to subtract from the horizontal distance some amount. And for uphill shots, you have to add to that horizontal distance. And that's where rangefinders like the Full Draw series from Leupold comes in. That was their kind of thing. And they have Archer's Advantage in the rangefinder that is kind of applying a ballistic solution on top of the horizontal distance. Same thing with the SIG's bow mode. Now, the SIG only takes into account, I believe they only ask you for your speed of your arrow. The Full Draw series asks you for your peep height as well, which is also a critical because of that parallax error. That's an important factor too. And so they're going to get you much, much closer than what a normal angle compensating rangefinder would. Now, I would still say they're not perfect. And mostly, again, because they're guessing at the ballistics of your setup. They don't have all the details that we have about the exact, again, like ballistic coefficient of your arrow and all of that to really get a true like firing solution for that shot. So it's like kind of three tiers. Line of sight, don't shoot angle shots for line of sight. You're going to completely miss by like 10 feet. Angle compensation mode, like normal angle compensation mode, probably pretty okay for your average dude who just is shooting normal shots at, you know, 10 degrees at inside of 40 yards or something, like totally fine. Next tier up would be something like the Leupold Full Draw series, the SIG archery mode. I haven't actually messed around personally with the SIG archery mode too much. I know it probably can't be super perfect because they're not asking for some of the variables that are really key, like peep height for those shots. And then like the holy grail tier of like, this is going to be perfect, is a true ballistics firing solution, like the one that we have that has all of the details that we need for like a dead nuts. And with that, there's also other factors with angle shooting. There's like form issues. There's different torques. There are like in the target world, you have to deal with like blade flex.
Yep.
If you're shooting a like, you know, fixed blade style rest, it's going to be bending more or less depending on if it's uphill or downhill or level. So that's a factor that we can't really account for. Mm-hmm. So all that to say, angle shooting's hard, but at least we can start with a, you know, good, solid, ballistically true firing solution. And that's something, just, I don't know if this will show up at all.
Yeah.
But this is our shot solver. So this would be very similar to any kind of rifle shot solver. So we have like a yardage scroller thing on this side. We have wind speed, wind direction, angle, all of that sort of stuff, and then we're spitting out a firing solution.
Does that
down here,
so that's an app that you, I mean, that's all part of the app, right? And I, it that's really cool. I mean, I I mean, to be completely honest, like I could see situations where you've got a bedded mule deer buck and he's below and you've got an hour or 2 hours to kill, you know, before he stands up. I think just the confidence that that gives you to be able to pull it up, you know, and kind of double check it, even if you're double checking it against what your rangefinder's telling you, you know, and you're making the best decision. I just think it's a really cool tool, I think. To potentially make the best shot on the animal that you can make.
Yeah. So and certainly for attack or for shoot like that, or for like in competition, there's a lot of, mm-hmm. you know, people on the pro circuit running either a printed out cut chart or like a more real time shot solver like this. This will also do the elevation stuff as well. So maybe you just kept the sight tape you have mm-hmm. or that you had at home on, and now you're at 10,000 feet, you can put that into, and that'll incorporate into the firing solution. So it's kind of like an all-in-one, like, you know, here's the details about your setup. Here's the shot that we have. Here's what you need to shoot that shot for to hit perfect, right. Both the, like on your sight tape, as well as the wind drift and all of that sort of stuff.
That's awesome. Yeah, that's cool. I gotta download it and play with it.
Yeah. It's just like, it's the same login as the web account. All your setups and things will just show up right in there.
Yeah.
It's two-way sync back and forth.
I haven't mentioned, but what's your, it's an online, so you sign up online, but like, what is your annual fee, if you will? Like, what does somebody pay? What are they, how much is it for a year?
Yeah. $36 a year on the website. Okay. It is slightly more expensive if you sign up through the app. Okay. It's $39.99 in the app, $36 on the website. There's a couple reasons for that. The first reason is we've been $36 a year now for like a year and a half. Mm-hmm. And you like, that's not an option when you set up the Apple in-app purchases. It's like 35 or 40.
Yeah.
So I was like, I don't really want to change the price everywhere for no reason. The other part is that Apple and Google both take a very hefty cut of the stuff you make from the app. So it's just kind of to offset that as well. So yeah, I would highly recommend signing up on the website if you want to save that couple bucks a year.
Mm-hmm.
And then you just log in to the app with your same account that you just signed up with on the website. And the website, the other thing I'll say about the mobile app is very like minimal right now. Like it has the shot solver, which is cool. It has like the normal setup management stuff, like adding your bow, adding your arrow. You can do that from your phone as well. And it has sight marks for your like target archery guys. It doesn't have sight tapes. It doesn't have like, you know, it doesn't have the feature where you can set your fixed pins. It doesn't have a lot of the stuff yet. It will over time. It's just been a, you know, time constraint on my end to get all that rolled out. So the website's still kind of the main thing. I would consider the app as more of like a offshoot, like value add in the field type situation.
Yeah, and I mean, we kind of run into the same thing. I talk to people all the time that have an insider account, and a lot of them do a lot of their research on their phone. And I'm like, why? It's, you know, jump on a desktop when you got some time, and like you can just really, to me, it's a lot more powerful tool for like research. Like when you're really diving in, you're using maps and that kind of thing. I just think it's a lot more user-friendly. It's a much more powerful tool via desktop. But then I look at like our maps, you go into the field, I think they're great for in the field application, you know, like actually navigating. And, you know, if you're trying to figure out how far that buck is, I think there's all kinds of tools that are really handy there. I kind of see it the same way. I mean, the shot solver thing I think is really cool. Like, I think to be able to pull your phone out in a situation like that, it's just such a vote of confidence. So I think it's neat. Really neat.
The crazy part to me is like people don't have computers anymore. Like I was like, how can you run like your life without like even my wife like trying to do like she didn't have a computer for the longest time and just trying to like pay bills or like log into like the health insurance. I mean, whatever, like random life stuff you have to do. Like everything is so much easier on a computer. Like, I don't know. It's like use a computer for adult work, for making site tapes, and like use your phone for fun. Like, I don't know. That's my stance, but
me too. But people... I don't know if that's just cause I'm old or what, but I see it the same way. I wanted to ask you real quick. So how much were you involved with this big study that they did at Easton? So Yates in the backcountry. I saw your name involved in that. Was that a fun project? It looked like fun.
It was fun. Yeah. I've been involved since the, I guess, very beginning. Yates approached me. He had reached out to him like way in the early days of precision cut archery. He got an account, made a sight tape. Like, this is crazy awesome. We got kind of chatting. We've kind of chatted a whole bunch over the last couple of years. And he had pitched the idea of, like, he writes a lot of like very technical articles for Western Hunter. He did like a big arrow audit a couple years ago where he like was looking at kind of spine consistencies and weight consistencies and all that sort of stuff across arrows. And so he's kind of done this like technical testing focused type work for that. And we got to chatting about, you know, we should do like an arrow ballistic study and like with my software and like extrapolating out that ballistic coefficient, we can compare like apples to apples, different arrow builds of like what they're actually doing without looking at, like, you see a lot of videos on YouTube where they're like looking at drop, you know, they're shooting like five different arrows and like looking at which one dropped more.
Yep.
But like, is that due to the differences in weight in the veins? Is that due to the differences in dynamic spine reaction out of the bow? And it just happens to be impacting a little bit lower. So in my opinion, those aren't like super great tests. So the kind of premise was, let's get a whole bunch of different arrow builds and let's shoot them, measure them with like measure their downrange speeds. And then with my software, with the like ballistics engine that I've built, extract out the, like drag data and be able to compare that, like, you know, vein to vein, broadhead to broadhead, and look at that. And the one thing, I guess, kind of relating to this, or like one reason this was cool for me is, and I'm sure you've noticed this too, like, you shoot field points all summer and then you go and your bow is perfectly tuned, shooting perfect bullet holes, all that. You screw in a blot, you screw in a broadhead, you go shoot at 100, let's say, like, it's going to hit low. Like, I don't care how well your bow is tuned, like, a broadhead is going to hit lower than a field point. And like, I like ran around with this like myself for years without really realizing what was going on. I was like, my bow has to be out of tune. What the heck? This is weird. Like, I'm always low at 100. Like, it's shooting perfect through paper and whatever. It's hitting low at 100. And as soon as I got a lab radar and started looking at what the downrange speeds is, like, the light bulb went off. Like, the broadhead slows down more. Like, even even mechanicals. Like, for my setup, a field point and, let's say, a sever, the sever is going to be, like, 6 feet per second slower by the time it gets to 60 yards here at home. So, like, it's going to hit lower. It just is.
Right.
And some broadheads are going to hit lower than others just due to that drag factor. So, with this, with the indoor facility, with the shooting machine, with the Garmin chronographs, we were able to shoot, like, oh, I think it was, like, 25 veins or 35 veins and 25 different broadheads. It was something like that. And compare, like, which are kind of the most efficient designs from a drag perspective. So all that to say, it's been, a couple years in the making. We did the big testing day at the Easton Foundation. Well, I guess, what was that? A few weeks ago. And we're right now in the process of going through all the data and putting that all together. And we got sound data going on too, which is going to be super cool. We found, it's like we tried to record sound data while we were there at the foundation, just as kind of a, like, we weren't really planning on it. And they're like, well, we're shooting all these different combinations. We might as well record sound data at the same time and see which, like, veins are the loudest and things. And then compare that to the drag data and compare that to the lift recovery data and see, you know, is there, like, the best of all worlds where we can get good steering, low drag, and low sound? Like, does that exist? But our sound data that we collected there was pretty much trash, just not, like, a good, not a good environment. There's, like, the sound, like, everything echoed, and then there's, like, people shooting on the other side of the wall there, so it just wasn't good. So we found a guy who is, like, a, he's like, Archery Sound Lab. I think it's Archery Sound Lab on Instagram. He reached out, and he is, like, a, I'm probably going to butcher the title, but he's, like, essentially, like, an acoustic engineer. Like, he does, like, studio design for a living. He's, like, a studio, like, acoustic studio design consultant or something for his job. And he also likes archery. And so he's been doing, like, he built, like, a custom, like, arrow sound testing chamber that's, like, all acoustically whatever designed to capture arrow sound in the most controlled environment possible and compare, you know, which one's louder. Compare like frequency response of the arrow. So maybe this arrow is louder, But this arrow has more sound in this frequency band that deer hear better than we do. So like it sounds louder to us, but it's potentially way louder to a deer. And there's actually like a deer can hear, I believe, and again, I might not have this all totally right, but a deer can hear like frequencies that we can't, like that are higher than what we can hear. And so there's like a lot of veins that have like a lot of sound in those frequencies that we can't hear, but it might sound like ridiculously loud to a deer.
Yeah.
So I'm really excited for that data. That's testing is still in progress as well. So once we have that I get a little bit of time here, as you can see, I got construction and things going on in the background here. We just moved into a new place here. So I'm
I think a lot of people are patiently waiting just to see, you know, because I think everybody's kind of interested in everything that you guys tested.
And just to set the record straight on that, like there's like, I would say a lot of people are impatiently waiting, but, that's all fine. But, like Yates has a full-time job. He's a full-time chemical engineer, consultant guy. I have a full-time job plus running a business. Plus we just moved into a house. Plus we had to ship all of the arrows to Australia for sound testing. Plus that guy's got a full-time job. So like we are working on it. We promise. It's just, it's just taking some time. The other thing I'll say is like, the whole premise of this study was there is, to the best we could control, there is like zero commercial interest in the results of this study. Mm-hmm. Like nobody who is involved is selling anything essentially that's going to benefit. Like we used Easton arrows, but for this test, like the arrow was simply the vehicle for the veins and the broadheads that were kind of the subjects of the tests.
Yep.
So we really tried to do the best we could to completely steer clear of any commercial interests. Like we're not trying to sell anything. We're just literally trying to do something that's cool for the archery industry.
Yeah.
So I hope that comes across well. And like, there's always this like, oh, like you're going to release this right before hunting season with like a new product. It's like, no, there's no, like there's no hidden agenda with like trying to sell something before hunting season. We're just literally busy and we're doing the best we can.
You mean you guys aren't in politics where you're 20 years down the road planning something to affect something else.
Yeah, exactly.
I won't push you on results, obviously, cause I want to see the whole thing, but would you give us like, you give me like a tidbit of like what will you be shooting this year?
I honestly don't know yet. Okay. I haven't got that far into the data. I do know, like I will say, let me look at, I have some of the raw data. Let's see if there's anything I can glean from this data. So I guess one thing, shocker, but field points have a lot less drag than broadheads. Like every broadhead had more drag than field points. Broadheads will hit lower at distance. I don't care. Like if they hit together at 100 yards, your bow is probably out of tune and it's giving a little bit of lift or a little bit of bias to that broadhead. So,
regardless of how streamlined it is, regardless of whether it's mechanical, like a thorn or something that sits almost entirely within the ferrule, you're still getting more drag out of any broadhead that exists.
Correct. Here's a tidbit. The Thorn and the Beast were the two most aerodynamically efficient broadheads.
Interesting.
The Thorn was number one. The Beast was number two, which were very close. And I would say it has to do a lot with like frontal area, like kind of the Beast has that very kind of streamlined bullet shape to it. Yeah. I shot a few animals with those last year, and I shot a few animals with Severs. I like the Beast. I didn't like that they opened up.
Yeah.
They opened up on me when I was crawling around antelope hunting a lot, and that was super annoying.
I was actually thinking about this today. I went on a little run. I was thinking about broadheads. I don't know why, but I was. But, you know, they do open up. I've hunted with Severs for a long time. Well, like the last probably 4 or 5 years, and I really liked them. I've had Severs that have opened up in my quiver, like they've, you know, burst through the silicone bands. And I've had them open up a couple times, mostly in New Zealand. Like when I was just there a couple of weeks ago, I had a few that opened up, and it's probably just due to the, you know, vegetation or whatever. But one thing that's interesting about the Beast is that if it does open up, like you're not reliant on any kind of bands or anything like that.
Yeah, you just like, shut it back up.
Yeah, you just shut it back up.
I don't know how Josh does it. I don't have those fingers of steel that I can.
Yeah, I can do it. But in saying that, I do have concerns that, like, because I sit here sometimes at my desk, usually when I'm in a marketing meeting or something like that, and I'll play with it, right? Like, I'll put it in and out and in and out. I have noticed it seems like over time that that spring has gotten more sensitive. So, like, a little bit of a bump will open it up. Hmm. Versus, like, when they were brand new out of the packet, I felt like it was pretty solid. So that does... that does concern me a little bit, but it's interesting to hear that they were the most, as far as like, you know, drag, that they were the most aerodynamic. Yeah.
Which that wasn't surprising. Like I had shot, well, I've also shot Severs for years, and I still think the Sever is a great option. Like mostly because you can shoot it. I love being able to shoot the broadhead, but of all, like they have a lot of drag, and I don't know. I think it's partly due to the way that like tip flares out. Hmm. And I guess that has to do with like getting through bone and things without like, you know, getting like opening up that bone and things a little bit before the blades get to it kind of thing. And probably also like kind of pushing out the hide a little bit. So you get that kind of slap cut type situation going on.
Yep.
But I think that introduces like a lot of turbulence and like it really disturbs the air as it goes over that tip. So like just shooting with the radar at home or shooting with, like shooting them over the Garmin, like you can see the Sever slow down a lot more than like the Beast did just in my own testing at home. So like from a wind drift perspective, like, yeah, Beast is going to win over a Sever. Just for me, I ended up shooting the Severs a bunch anyway, because of the, like, depending on the hunt I'm doing, like crawling around in the grass and things, having those, like I would, like if I'm crawling after an antelope and I have my bow set down with an arrow knocked and I'm like, you know, moving the bow up and then taking a step and then moving the bow up, like having that blades open up, like in that situation is so annoying to me. Like,
yeah. Oh, for sure. Yeah, absolutely.
So yeah, like there's like other reasons to choose, you know, other things, I guess.
Yeah. So yeah. Yeah. Anytime you dive into one thing, I mean, you're only considering one thing. So if it's aerodynamics, but like there's a whole bunch of other considerations to picking a broadhead, you know, or a vane,
exactly,
or whatever it might be.
Yeah.
You know, if the vane that you shoot is loud, you know, that's one thing, but if it's not large enough to actually guide the arrow in the broadhead, then, you know, no big, I mean, what are you worried about sound, right? If you can't hit your point of impact. So
exactly.
That's interesting. Well, man, I could talk to you for a long time, but I've had you for an hour, an hour and 20, but I'll cut you loose. But I will say, like, I'm super interested and looking forward to see what you guys found out. And then I just think that, you know, the product that you produce is really cool. I think it's really neat. It's user-friendly. I'm a complete moron, and, like, I can figure it out. So if I can, anybody can.
There's definitely some confusion, but, you know, shoot me an email, we have a text number. You can DM us on Instagram or Facebook, usually real quick to get back to people. If you've used any of the other softwares, I would say you're going to find ours much more easy. Now, granted, I might be biased because I built it, but I think a lot of the kinks are worked out and it should be pretty like intuitive. Like if you log in, it should make pretty much sense of what you're supposed to do. I hope. And if not, yeah, shoot us an email, DM. We have like very thorough kind of step-by-step guides on pretty much everything. Working on getting a YouTube channel set up. This is the basement. My office is going to be in the shed over there, and planning on kind of setting up some sort of a poor man's recording studio and cranking out some good like YouTube type tutorial videos. So nice. I think all that'll be good, but yeah.
Well, that's cool, man. And then the website's just Precision Cut Archery.
Yep, precisioncutarchery.com.
People can Instagram, sign up.
Facebook.
And, yeah, build their own sight tapes. But I appreciate you jumping on. I learned a lot. I think it's really cool what you're doing. I think it would definitely benefit people. And again, even if the difference is, you know, if your shot distance in the field, like say you're hunting and most of your shot distances are 40 yards and under, you know, a factory tape is probably pretty close. But reality, just that added confidence that you have, like for a follow-up shot, like you brought up, I think that's a great point, but just the added confidence that you have that your tape is built specifically for you, your bow, your arrow, the elevation. You know, I love the fact that you've got the app and the wind drift and everything involved, you know, the cut charts. I just think it's a really cool product. And I think it would be, I mean, for me, I'm always trying to get better, trying to be a better bow hunter. You know, I've had some shots in recent years where I hit animals and didn't find them. And it's the worst feeling in the world. I hate it.
Absolutely.
Like, I absolutely hate it. Sick to my stomach. I think about it all the time, probably every day. And if there's anything that I can do that I can kind of shave that margin of error, I'm going to try to do it. So I think your product's super cool. I think it's going to help people. So I would encourage people to check it out and build their own sight tapes at home. You get a better product, I think.
Yeah, for sure. So, well, Trill, I super appreciate you having me on. It was good chatting with you.
Yeah, have to likewise. Do it
again sometime. We can chat for another 4 hours or something.
Yeah, we will again sometime, I'm sure. All right. Thanks, Tristan. I appreciate it.
Yeah, appreciate it, man.
Yep, bye.